We're talking to author Alex Lewin, who is a fermenting expert. He's written several books on the topic. Did I read? Did you go to Harvard?
I did.
You're kidding. Let me switch this around so people can learn more about you. Why don't you tell the folks a little bit about yourself?
So I went to college, studied math and science. I think I thought math and science held the answers to everything, all the questions worth asking. And then I got interested in health and I started reading books, and one of them said one thing, another said another thing, and they had good data to back them up. And I said, wait a minute, what's happening here? These things disagree. How can this be? This is science, isn't it?
Yeah. And isn't that most of science? Everyone disagrees. You know, one side says one, the other side says another.
Well, that's true. You know, I had thought naively, even through college, that at least in physics, that couldn't possibly be true. But then a famous physicist named Niels Bohr said that, you know, a new scientific theory doesn't gain acceptance because of its self-evident truth. You have to wait for the older generation to die out, you know, before people will accept it as self-evident. So if that happens in physics, then imagine what happens in like medicine and health and like nutrition, which is a very immature science, if I can make that judgment.
Sure. Now, you chose an interesting focus, right? You're honing in on fermented foods as your passion. An interesting passion, not going to lie. Some people like golf. Some people like football. You like kombucha.
It's true.
It's a beautiful thing.
Are you asking me why? I can tell.
Yeah, it's kind of why I'm saying it. Yeah, I want to know why you chose this path. Did something happen in your life that you found the need to dig into this? And what's your story, Alex?
I think so. Well, you know, my dad was sick. He had heart disease and you know, the doctors, you know, told him to do this, told him to do that, but it didn't make him much happier. It didn't make him much healthier. And so that was part of, I think, why I started reading books about health and nutrition. And like I said, they all said different things. So I was like, what is going on here? And I started digging deeper and I started figuring out a few things. And one of them is that we're having a national, possibly global epidemic of digestive distress.
Without a doubt.
And that, you know, limits our ability to assimilate nutrients. It, you know, leads to, you know, problems in and of itself. And people, you know, start taking pills to fix their digestion, and then that just sort of makes things worse.
Well, let's back up. I mean, yeah. What do you think, in your opinion, in your scientific opinion, the reason is for this?
In my not necessarily scientific opinion, it's hard to say, but for instance, it's a good lead-in. Maybe 100 years ago, people ate a lot more fermented foods, and today we eat a lot more dead foods, including like canned foods and processed foods and food with preservatives in them. And a lot of what preservatives do is inhibit the growth of microbes, and we hear about like our gut microbiome and, you know, probiotic, like preservatives act against that, like how they wind up behaving when they're in our actual body is undoubtedly more complicated. But we're not eating the healthy foods that we were eating 100 years ago. And there's also like stuff in the environment. There's environmental toxins. There's, you know, toxins in the water. You know, our water is remarkably safe from a sort of microbiological point of view. Like, we're not getting foodborne illnesses mostly in the U.S., but we also are ingesting some things that aren't serving us.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with 100% of that. I mean, I think the first place you got to look is the person putting the food in their mouth. You know, like that's when people are shocked by the way they feel, and yet they're, you know, eating McDonald's 3 days a week, and you know, or just not taking care of themselves. And then there's a factor of stress. I think something you didn't mention is right. a huge factor. You know, why did you turn to fermentation as a cure? You wrote two books on it. You know, like I said, it's an interesting passion. Mm-hmm. What have been the results of your findings, and have you tested it on yourself?
Oh yeah, no, I'm certainly my own best guinea pig.
Which, by the way, you brought some stuff here that I want to just show. You're going to make me taste something while we're talking here? Because I'm thirsty.
Well, I'm going to taste it myself first.
To make sure you don't poison me or anything?
Person, yeah. I want to make sure it tastes good.
So what is it that's in that bottle right there that you're tasting? Good?
The molasses didn't quite mix up.
Good. I'm glad you tasted it first.
Yeah, it's still a little sour. So this is switchel. So In the old days, there were alcoholic drinks, like the old days being like Greece and Rome and all that. There were alcoholic drinks, and then like at some point when you have alcohol, it sort of turns to vinegar on its own and it gets sour. And actually back in the old days, they had a different problem with their drinking water, is that it was not bacteriologically safe. And so you drink it and then you get dysentery and then you die, right? So in order to treat their water, essentially, like you hear about the Greeks drinking, you know, wine mixed with water. And it wasn't because they didn't like full strength wine. It was because they wanted to drink some water. And in order to do that, they had to make it safe. And so they poured some wine in it and that killed things off. So when the wine turned to vinegar, they could still use it for that. So there's a long tradition of drinking sort of dilute alcohol or dilute vinegar drinks. I'm going to see if this is ready for you yet.
All right. I'm waiting on it. Not quite.
That's pretty good. I'm going to...
Hey, Dave, do you have any tequila back there that we can mix this all up in? And any Dolce Vita? Why is it like... Because you did say, Alex, that you could make alcohol cocktails out of this, right?
Well, sure. I mean, I think one of the big hits in the new book is going to turn out to be the pineapple wine, which you can make with the part of the pineapple that you don't eat, like the husk and the core.
So the waste that you'd probably throw out.
Right.
Just turn it into... So because here's the thing. Like I always think, like when you think fermented, it doesn't have the most positive association, although that's changed through marketing of drinks like the kombucha drink that you brought with you. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think of fermented, I think of like old food. Dave, I mean, what do you think of the word fermented?
Yeah, and that's, and like he said, I like what he said a little while ago, that we're not eating the same food from 100 years ago. So it's the way they used to do eat, and that's why everybody was so healthy and lived to like 90.
That's good. See, I'm a ginger fan. Oh, yeah. Like, I'm chewing on that piece of ginger right now.
Talk about energy. Ginger gives you lots of energy.
I can eat ginger. When I get sushi, I just eat the ginger from the sushi. So what's in here? So this is stitzel, you call it? What is it?
Switchel.
Switchel.
So it comes from the long tradition of vinegar-based drinks, going back to a Roman drink called Posca. Which they used to give to Roman soldiers.
That's great.
Thank you. Apple cider vinegar, molasses, which is very mineral rich, very nutrient dense, and then some ginger. And then I use some sparkling water just because that's, you know, a little more interesting. And if you're trying to get people off of soda, like this is a good, you can make it a little sweeter and then.
Yeah, I can see how you could play with this, you know, but you want to keep the ingredients natural, right? Keep it simple.
Yeah.
You don't want to get into putting process elements in it because it kind of defeats the purpose, right?
Yeah. I mean, pretty much anything you can drink will be better than, I don't have any big corporate sponsors who sell soda to people.
Right.
Anyway, I think I've already done them wrong. But, you know, soda actually arose as an imitation of old fermented drinks because fermented drinks can be fizzy. So they said, okay, let's make this thing fizzy. And fermented drinks can be sour, so they said, okay, let's add some phosphoric acid to the soda. And unfortunately, phosphoric acid is bad for you. It's carcinogenic, and it pulls nutrients, minerals out of your bones. And then they said, okay, well, we have to make it sweet, so they made it way too sweet with, you know, the least mineral-rich sweeteners they could find because they were cheap. And so compared to something which has minerals and has live microbes in it, and of course soda isn't probiotic generally, right?
So yeah, not the best.
Soda
was
an imitation, a sort of industrial mass produced.
This is good, man. I could sip this on a Sunday afternoon just like this.
Right on. Well, the good thing about making this at home too is it probably costs pretty much nothing to make a glass.
Fraction of the price.
You can buy a bottle of Switchel at the store for like $7.
So we have a caller. And folks, if you want to talk to Alex, if you ever experimented with preserving food at kombucha or trying to make your own, or want to learn how and you have some questions, 312-981-7200 is our number. Let's take our first call. Carol. Hey, Carol, thanks for calling the show.
I had a bottle of Synergy.
Okay.
And I had a few bottles. And is that what he's talking about? The organic kombucha, gingerberry?
Sure. I mean, there are a lot of companies that make kombucha, but GT's.
Okay. From.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. It was from Whole Foods, I think, or Heinen's, one of them.
Uh huh.
And opening it up, I opened up the first bottle and it popped.
When you say pop, like you mean like exploded?
Exploded.
Like in your, I'm not laughing, like in your face or just like the bottle broke?
Well, I had it in the sink leaning down as I was opening it up because I heard it sizzling. It went all over the kitchen.
Ooh.
I had to go to the emergency room. My fingers, I thought, were gone.
You're kidding me.
I looked and they, oh no, it was terrible.
Wait, the glass broke and everything?
The glass didn't break.
Just the
power, the power of the drink. as it came out, the explosion, it was like an explosion that caused my hands to bleed.
Wow. I mean, just so for the record, Alex does not work for that company. He's not associated with that company. He's just he's an expert and author. But he can maybe spread some light on why that might have happened. Alex, why do you think?
Yes. But, you know, a friend of mine, a young lady, was working at Heinen's, and she said they had to be very careful when people bought that drink not to jumble it up or shake it, or they had to lie it down very carefully because there were, well, I think there was a class action suit with the Whole Foods and the Blue Cheese. So this might not be what he is talking about.
Well, I will say that kombucha is a living food, and it's important to keep it cold and not shake it up too much. And even then, like, you don't know what's happened in the cold chain before it gets to you. So
that's true.
It's like opening a bottle of champagne, you know.
That's what it was, but this was even worse. That I know was a pop. I've experienced that. This was like an explosion. I really thought my fingers were gone.
Wow. I'm really sorry to hear
that. Yeah, Carol, that's crazy. Well, thank you for the call. I appreciate for the awareness. Thank you so much. That's crazy. I've never heard of, that kind of violent reaction from a kombucha, and I'm sure it's valid. I hope she's okay. So you say it's a living thing. I mean, what is it in that causes the reaction like that?
Right. So kombucha is, maybe people have heard of a SCOBY. The SCOBY is like the floaty thing when you're making kombucha, or sometimes it forms in the bottle when you buy it. It's a symbiotic collection of bacteria and yeast.
Living.
SCOBY, it's an acronym. Yeah, it's living. That's the probiotic part.
It's a good thing.
It's a good thing. It also means that those little fellows are in there eating the sugar and turning it into carbon dioxide, among other things, which is what makes it fizzy. And like fizzy up to a point is nice. And then like fizzy, if it takes off your fingers, obviously is
not so nice.
Not so nice.
Good Lord. Some volatile kombucha out there, folks. Watch it. Buyer beware.
Yeah.
So when you're making it at home, do we have to worry about those same things?
Yes, potentially. I mean, usually the routine with kombucha is you make the kombucha in an open container so the fizz isn't going to build up, and then you bottle it. And when you bottle it, you have the option to add, I usually add like a little fruit or a little ginger or something like that, or you can add a little sugar. And the emphasis is a little. So you start adding nothing, and then you leave it to sit out for a little extra time for what's called a secondary fermentation. And then you put it in the fridge, and then when it's cold, you drink it. And then if that's not fizzy enough, then the next time you use a little more, or if it's too fizzy, then maybe you use a little less. But like when you're doing it yourself, you can even keep notes if you're that kind of person, or just keep in mind how it was going, and it'll vary with the temperature and, you know, the weather and all that. But small changes, you know, gradual changes. When you buy it in the store, I mean, this sounds like, I guess, a reason to make fermented drinks yourself rather than buying them in the store too. Don't blow your hand off, and it costs about a tenth as much when you do it at home too.
Sure. And I'm flipping through your book here. It's pretty awesome. The pictures are great. Is this cactus pear that I'm looking
at?
I'm a huge fan of cactus pear.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. there's your fermented drink. Maybe.
What is this? Well, talk me through it.
Colonche. This is a specialty of my co-author Raquel, and it's a wine made with a cactus pear. I mean, any fruit you can make a wine out of. So there's a recipe in there that I think is going to be a big hit. And you heard it here first, or maybe you didn't, but it's called tepache, which is a pineapple wine you make with the husk and core of the pineapple, the part you weren't going to eat anyway.
Dave just chimed in. Where is it? Very popular in Mexico?
Yeah, tepache from the pineapple. It's made for fermented pineapple, no?
Exactly.
And you know what? That also helps you lose weight, from what I hear.
Yeah, well, pineapple has great enzymes in it.
Yeah. You got to know Dave. Like anything you could tie to alcohol to health benefits, he's all about it.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, if you do four shots or more, you'll drop 2 pounds overnight. But, from puking the next day. But
there's a thing about a lot of people think that it's wine or it has liquor, but it's just all the fermentation, right?
Yeah, I mean it may have like 3 or 4% alcohol in it, but it's a far cry from like a lot of things that people drink every day. I mean, in the old days, people drank low alcohol things all the time, and it wasn't as alcohol, we have a tricky relationship with alcohol nowadays because we have to pilot these 2-ton steel cages around and, you know, for hours at a time, which you mentioned stress earlier. Like, we're not designed to be in fight or flight response driving a car on a highway sure. for an hour at a time. But in the old days, we could drink a little alcohol and it would be good for us. And the other thing about tepache is it makes a great mixer. Like, you can have tepache with mezcal, or you can have
that sounds
yeah
good.
You know, that's what they rum. Used to drink at the ranch. And my great-grandfather lived to 103, my great-grandmother to 96, so they were drinking all this stuff.
Okay, there's the proof then.
There you go. Right. Beautiful.
The other thing about fermented drinks like that is you don't filter them, and they have all this stuff that collects, and all the stuff that collects is like B vitamins and other good things, and they're the things that will prevent you from getting a hangover too. And maybe make you live longer.
So. Well, there you go. All everything that Dave wanted to hear and more to justify his...
Now I feel healthy.
He feels healthy. This is fascinating stuff. I can go on forever, but unfortunately we're running out of time. We're talking to Alex Lewin, the author of Kombucha, Kefir, and Beyond. Go pick it up. His co-author is Raquel Guajardo. Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow, that was good. And can people pick it up at Amazon or any of the bookstores nationwide?
Yeah, Amazon is great. Or ask your local bookseller to order it for you.
The Frank Fontana Show.
Ooh, I like that song, Dave.
Food. It's just around that time that we're getting hungry. Food.
Getting hungry. It smells good in here. And you know why? Because, you know, it's our food time. We're talking Thanksgiving. We're talking about what are you doing for Thanksgiving? Chef Sean Curry is joining us. You know him from the Fairmont, Chicago here, Millennium Park. Chef, thanks for coming in.
It's great to be here, Frank. Thanks for having me.
It's always nice to have you here. Not because you bring food, but because you're a good guy.
Thank you.
But you bring food, too.
Right. That's always a bonus, right?
Yeah. I mean, you guys have a phenomenal program. We were just talking about it off air for Thanksgiving. Why don't you talk about it?
So the idea is we want to keep, you know, family traditions going. So in this day and age, you may not have time to make a full Thanksgiving meal the way we're going. So let us do it for you. Traditional stuffing my mom used to make when I was a kid, beautiful bronze turkey, some traditional green beans and mushrooms, and we have bourbon sweet potatoes. Putting it all together, it's $2.75 for the whole package.
So the whole kit and caboodle. I can come to you guys and say, mm-hmm. I'm not cooking this year. I want crazy sides, dessert, the whole nine.
Right. We'll give you all the sides for 8 people for $2.75, and then you can add on. We have some beautiful apple pies, pumpkin, pecan pie that you can choose those and upgrade, if you will.
Let's go straight to my favorite part, pumpkin pie.
It's delicious.
What do you tell me about it?
Make
my mouth water.
We have the best pastry team in the city, bar none. They follow the old traditions. They take their time, make the crust. The best part of my job is I go in and taste it every day, like to make sure it's right. And
so you're that guy.
I'm that guy. Yeah,
you're not necessarily. You know, I'm sure you sweat over the line occasionally, but. You come in and just quality control everything.
Absolutely. It's pretty awesome, actually.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
So we just take our time and do it right. And the idea is to turn moments into memories, right?
Yeah.
So our restaurant will do some non-traditional, like the torchetta.
What's the torchetta? Did you bring that here today?
We did, yeah. So it's, porchetta, which pork is one of my favorite meals of all time. We're doing that with turkey this year. So the same process of cooking it, but using the turkey. So we'll have that in Columbus Tap, our restaurant. And then for this event, you know, we're just following the right tradition. So when you're eating our food, you're still thinking of when you were a kid and all the value that brings to you.
Right. It's not like overly restauranted.
It's not ego food.
It's not vanity. It's not beauty. Although I'm sure it looks, the presentation is gorgeous. But I got to say this. Turkey to me is always just a hit or miss if you don't get the timing right on the moisture of it. What is the secret to the moisture in this turkey? Because it is ridiculous.
Brining your turkey. We're using some Michigan cider, and the key is to brine your turkey for just the right time. And again, it's cooking it at the right temperature, making sure you're using quality products, making sure the salt content in the brine is just right.
Just right? Because, I mean, you don't want a salty turkey.
No, you're going to have to come in and ask for the recipe for me to give it out. I don't want to give it
out. I'm trying to get it out of the chef here because I know turkey's not an easy thing to fit. A lot of people screw turkey up.
I am fortunate to have one of the best teams in the city. I don't know what else to say about it. Our culinary team is awesome.
Does your wife cook at home?
She
does. You brought your family here with you.
I did, yeah. Actually, my wife cooks a lot of things better than I do.
Really?
We won't say what, but yeah, I learned a few things from her as well.
So, all right, some of the side dishes you brought here are spectacular. It's all great. Walk me through some of the sides you're offering.
Sure. So the signature sausage and apricot stuffing, that's a memory for me.
Is that what
me.
We have here?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a recipe my mom used to make when I was a kid. And I remember picking the bread apart and smelling it when she sautéing the onions and celery.
Are you using rolls? Or what kind of bread are you using?
No, we're actually using loaf bread, like regular white and wheat bread, just like I did when I was a kid. You pull it apart and... Again, that's the beautiful memory for me. And people have seemed to like it a lot. We use local sausage, some dried apricots to sweeten it up a bit. And then we also have your green bean with the burnt mushrooms or charred mushrooms. It's kind of a takeoff of the green bean casserole. But that tends to get a little messy, so sure. We'll keep the sauce on the side for you. And you could either have that as a soup or pour it on top and have that tradition there as well. One of my favorite things, which I didn't bring, is the maple bourbon sweet potatoes.
Oh, how could you forget that, Chef?
I'm sorry, Frank. You're going to have to
come over and buy some. I would
right.
love to, yes. So if I wanted just sides, can we piecemeal this, or is it all sold in one package?
No, you can get the whole package or call up, and if you just want some pies, some of the sides, you know, maybe you love cooking the turkey yourself, but you don't want to go through the hassle of the sides, give us a call.
Did we talk pumpkin pie yet?
We talked a little bit. Again, I'm kind of keeping some of our secrets to ourselves, but the key is...
Can you tell me what the shell, do you guys do it like a different, do you do graham cracker? What do you do as the base?
No, it's taking your time. It's just like grandma used to make. Wait, make sure your butter's cold. Make sure you don't overwork it.
I'll get it out of you. Don't worry. We still have a few minutes here. I'll tell you what,
if I see you on Thanksgiving picking up your package, I'll write down the recipe.
I'm not
going to
lie. You probably won't because my sister-in-law is cooking and she'd be terribly offended if
I
brought a full turkey dinner from the Fairmont she wouldn't let me in the door. I don't think she's making all sorts of crazy stuff.
I totally understand.
So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Philadelphia, and I ended up out here. I was catering movies for a while, and Chicago
was
booming.
Interesting business.
It was great. It was a lot of fun. And then there was threats. The Actors Guild was going to go on strike while we were out here. And something just drew me to Chicago. And it's funny, actually, my first hotel I worked at is where I met my wife. And the rest is a fairy tale, so they say.
So the Fairmont is where...
No, the first one was actually a Marriott. But I started with Marriott, and I stayed there because of Connie. Mm. And
tell me about that moment where you guys met.
She was actually the director of finance, and I didn't know anything of food cost or.
So you were overspending, and she get in my office.
It was crazy, and she just offered to help, and she ended up becoming the best asset, and I actually owe the success of my career to
How
my
nice
wife.
Is that?
She showed me the ropes. She was my mentor. And then has supported me every step of the way. And when I said, you know, I want to go to the Fairmont. It's a great brand, luxury hotel, high volume, and I like keeping busy. And her and my kids have just been the best support ever. So
that's great. And you shared some numbers with me. I don't know, I think if we have to talk about them on air, but you guys are kicking some major butt over there.
We are. We're feeding a lot of people, millions of dollars in food and beverage, getting rave reviews.
In a food town, you know, mm-hmm. It's crazy. I mean, not that you don't deserve the accolades, because it's phenomenal, but you have a lot of competition. What do you think your secret sauce is?
I think it's tasting. And again, we do contemporary food, but we don't skip steps. The culinarians that I have on the team, they've been doing it for a long time, and they're trained. They're not lazy. They're very disciplined in tasting their food, making sure we're following standards, and they taste, and that's the key. You got to love what you do. And when you taste your food, it's not about what you like, but you got to think to yourself, will my guests love this? Not just like it, but will they love what I'm doing? Because we're taking a moment in time and turning it into a memory. And if we cook bad food, it's a bad memory. Sure. But like in weddings, you know, if we cook the good food, people talk about it forever.
Sure.
And that's what we stay focused on.
Now, what will you be doing Thanksgiving? Will you be at the hotel, or are you going to be doing
it? I will. It's actually two. So I'll be the first in the kitchen in the morning, helping put the turkeys in and getting everything right. And then my executive sous chef, Sean, will kind of hand off. He'll come in about noon. And we're actually going to drive to Michigan to have Thanksgiving dinner with Connie's family.
How nice is that?
It's awesome. Again, the traditions, right? Yeah. And we get to do both. So,
what is your fondest Thanksgiving memory that you can think back to?
Growing up as a kid, it was every year helping my mom make the stuffing. I would always sit at the table, and she would give me the big loaves of bread, and picking the bread apart, and she would tell me how important it was. And as she was cooking, here, taste this. And she would always have cookies available because she was big into this cookie handoff that you do.
Which you brought a jar of cookies here. Is this part of the handoff?
It is. It's a cookie. Kind of work on in a luxury cookie exchange. That's another tradition that people just don't have time for that we're trying to help. That's on November 30th and December 1st. You come in and we're making close to 20,000 cookies. And you come in, you pick 3 dozen, and we're going to have wine and music and some snacks.
Sounds amazing.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We want to keep the traditions going in the city, Frank.
Fantastic, Chef. Thank you so much, Chef Sean Curry with the Fairmont Chicago Millennium Park. You heard it. The special is here. You get for the full turkey, you get the sides, you get dessert. The cost is $275. Who do they call? Who do they contact? And how soon should they do this?
I would do it right away. The numbers are filling up pretty well. You have until November 17th. But the best thing to do is to go onto our website. It's www.chicagothanksgiving.com.
So you got a whole website set up just for that.
Absolutely. It's growing in popularity. It's great to see.